Oi oi, it's your boy, the world's foremost fighting game critic, Jack Slack, and we're here to talk about Street Fighter VI, which I've been playing for the last couple of days, or whenever, you know, since it came out. I put Tears of the Kingdom on the back burner, I tried Street Fighter, I said, God, I hate Street Fighter, it's so not good as Tekken. And then I discovered the modern controls, and that made my life a lot easier. Don't have to destroy my fucking directional pad to execute moves. I mean, it's great fun. I'm having good fun with it. I'm finally learning about footsies and all that shit. And they made Zangief's throws one button, which is fantastic for me. It used to be like a double half circle of the D-pad to get the spinning pile driver. But yeah, super impressed with Street Fighter VI. Presentation's fantastic. Haven't gone into like all the making your own avatar bollocks. I've just been playing straight up fights against people. I haven't gone into the story mode or the world tour or whatever it is. I do like the hub where things take place. They've got a section of the hub with Street Fighter 2 and Final Fight and a couple of other old games there that you go over and play on the arcade machine within the game, which is such a flex that they do nowadays. I mean, I think it was Yakuza Like a Dragon, which everyone was telling me to play for a while, and I didn't tell anyone, but I had been playing it. They put the whole of Virtua Fighter 4 in their game, which is, you know, just would blow the mind of someone back when that came out. It's also a big flex on what content you own as a company. Like, the one I always talk about is Wreck-It Ralph 2. It's just Disney's victory lap of the culture. Everything is in that film. Like, they own all the brands and everything to do with anything. And it all turns up. It's a fucking terrible film too. But yeah, you come out of that film feeling like, man, we really do be living in the Disney dystopia. So who have I played on Street Fighter VI? I've played exclusively Luke because he's the tutorial character and the Geef. I need to play Honda because my main on Tekken is Ganryu. He fucking rocks. Tried a bit of Dhalsim. Not a huge fan. Haven't tried Guile yet, who I did used to play a bit back in the day. And all these new ones, I was like, I'm not getting invested learning a new one if I can play Zangief. Who needs combos? All you need is the missile dropkick aerial move and his little hopping knee forwards, which you then grab the pile driver off. Especially if you whiff it. And he's got armor now, which is also cool. But I was reading something by, can't remember who it was, some fighting game nerd. He had rules for, or his like basic rules for learning how to get good at any fighting game. And the focus was like learning the systems of the game, so like the drive. What's it called? Drive impact? All the drive functions of Street Fighter, rather than like focusing on learning combos or shit like that. And I tried to put that into action while trying out this game, and it's really, yeah, it's been quite helpful. Because I'm one of those people who like, it's the fighting game equivalent of saving all your potions and ethers and elixirs and whatever for the big boss, and then no boss is actually big enough. You end up at the last boss and you've got hundreds of potions that you never used. That's what I enjoyed about like The Witcher on harder modes. You had to go and make the potions and you had to use them. But yeah, I've got that with fighting games. I don't like watching my meters or my bars and using them, because I'm like, what if I need it later? And then you never do. You get wiped out in like 30 seconds. And it could have saved you. But anyway, enough about Street Fighter VI. It's a fun game. Recommend you try it. I do need to get back to Tears of the Kingdom and beat Ganon's ass. I was making good progress on that. And the people of Hyrule are probably like, where's he gone? Fight stuff. What you're here for, I imagine. A smattering of content this weekend. A smear of content across this weekend. Some good fights somewhere. Some good fights at the UFC, actually. This is a nice break from the really terrible cards. Still a Macy Barber co-main event, which isn't ideal. But there's a couple on here that are interesting. Plus, we got various other stuff going on this week. We got Rising. We got Takeru's comeback. We got Shootboxing, which I'm going to talk about, but never going to be able to work out how to watch that. We got a boxing match between Franco and Iaoka, which is a rematch of a really good fight last year. And we got one, their Friday night series. So UFC, Emmett versus Topuria, that's your headliner. That's the money fight. It's fantastic. Love it. Emmett, obviously, you know, we got recency bias on him because he got absolutely obliterated by Yair Rodriguez in his last fight. Couldn't get basically a single punch off. Totally overwhelmed and finished in the second round. But until then, he'd been doing pretty well. He was on a good run. He had that great fight with Burgos. He beat Dan Ige. He beat Cater by a close split decision. You know, I think Emmett's always going to be... Well, part of it is that, like, he's a weird, ugly orc guy and that people like making fun of. But he does have sort of a frustrating style sometimes. He's a huge hitter, massive hitter. But... also spends large portions of the fight not really doing much, and he doesn't have a tremendous depth of striking knowledge, or at least depth of striking applications. You know, if you have a great right or a great left, I mean, he's sort of switch hits, and he throws a good overhand off both sides. If you've got a great right straight or right overhand, you build combinations towards that. You... use other techniques to draw people out, and we'll talk about this with Topuria in a minute. You use other techniques to draw people out onto counter overhand or counter said punch, whatever your money punch is. If you've got a money punch, you build everything towards it. That's a very old school boxing mentality, but it's still, for most people, is the best. It's not, most people aren't going to be Oscar De La Hoya, Sugar Ray Robinson, Canelo, where they've just got four or five excellent shots. You know, most people have one or two excellent shots after a career in, and by excellent shots, I mean like most big punches, if they load up a punch, they'll be able to knock someone out. Very few guys come out of their stance with their regular version of a punch and have knockout power. People will have one or they'll have two, you know, they'll have a great left hook and a great right straight, or a great right uppercut and a great left hook. You know, they'll have a big punch or two big punches. And, there's only been a few of those guys. So it's an old school mentality, but it still works. Build yourself around that one money punch. Make it happen. And if they really put the belt and braces on to deny you the money punch, you just put a bit more emphasis on other stuff. So you can start loading up with your left hook to the body because the guy is overcompensating to deal with your overhand. But Emmett doesn't have shit for setups. Circles the cage, jumps in with a jab and an overhand from either stance. And sometimes it works, like when he starched Michael Johnson or knocked down Lamas with a... Was that a jab? I can't remember. But I think he knocked down Bektik with a jab, didn't he? But yeah, he covers ground very quickly, which is impressive. But it's the same shit every time. And it either relies on like catching people early with how surprisingly fast you are, or catching people like Michael Johnson late when they're just getting lazy. You know, the three good fighters, I mean, he did catch Burgos a number of times, but Burgos is there for it all the time. But the three good fighters he fought recently, he had his big moments, but he wasn't close to stopping them. And, you know, the Yair Rodriguez fight, like I said, didn't lay a glove on Yair because Yair was always moving. Yair was only in range when he was throwing his shit, and then Emmett was, you know, chasing after him, either flailing or not throwing at all. So I hate talking about him because what do you say? He hasn't shown anything new, even when he was on his winning streak. You know, it's just... the same, have a big punch, cover ground fast occasionally. Ilia Topuria is a little bit sexier for people, like analysts and things, because he does have pretty good boxing form a lot of the time. And I think he's a good example of a guy who knows what he's good at, or knows his money punch and sticks to it. Like, he doesn't look for the left hook that much, and unless it's in combination following things. All his game basically is a jab, normally a body jab actually, and an overhand. And he throws nice combinations to the body with both hands and so on, but everything is in service of landing that overhand. And it means that it's not a beautifully rounded game. If you watch all his fights, he gets the guy towards the fence and they start circling out. And he honestly actually does better when they circle away from his overhand because he catches up with them and swings on him. If they circle towards his overhand, A lot of the time he'll just miss because he's shorter than most of his opponents, and they'll get away. And he sort of throws himself out of position. Doesn't really, like, when he does throw his overhand, he doesn't really get back on position always. That got him caught a couple of times against Jai Herbert. But yeah, he's a guy who found his power punch, committed to having some good textbook boxing technique, and is comfortable in a scrap, and also makes efforts to put people to the cage. I'm not going to say he's a great ring cutter, but he knows that he does his best work when he corners the guy, and they cut. You know, they don't have as much room to get away from him swinging at them. Honestly, like, I suspect Emmett's the harder hitter, but Topuria goes forward from round one and makes his hand connect with this guy's chin. Josh Emmett circles around doing fuck all for large portions of the fight a lot of the time, waiting for the chance to run on a straight line through the opponent. If you transplanted the ring craft and decision-making of Ilia Topuria, you know, the skill sets on the feet aren't that different. A jab and an overhand. Topuria's being a body jab and an overhand, but Topuria corners people. And Topuria shows that he'll feint and pull back, or he'll jab and he'll step back, or jab and pull, and he goes on the counter. You know, it's really, we're always talking about like the intangibles, but those are things that you can't really, I mean, you could draw a diagram of it, but it's not something you can point to and say that he has the strongest feint in the world, or he has the strongest choice to cut the ring, or he has the strongest rush you to the fence in the world, or whatever. No, it's just, those are decisions he's making. They're things that he's bringing himself closer to landing that whopping right hand. And those are the things that, when we're talking about fights, yeah, you're not going to learn a wicked left hook in 8 weeks or whatever. But you can make better decisions to use the tools you have. And those are the things that cost you in a fight in the moment. Wrestling-wise, I think it's interesting because Topuria, you know, he made his mark as a grappler in his early going, and he hadn't, I think he knocked out one person by the time he got to the UFC, and then he had a fight with Yusuf Zilal, which went to the decision, and then he just started banging people out with his hands. But very strong wrestler. I mean, there was a great one in the Zilal fight where he's got his back to the fence in an over-under. He steps around Zilal, and he, you know, back arches and throws him Greco-style, which was incredible. His top game's fun, his grappling on top. He has really nice front headlock work, which was one of the things we were looking at when he was going to fight Ryan Hall, because, you know, if you want to get the fight to the ground and pulling guard stops working, or the guy's not going to engage you in the guard, or if the guy's beating you up from guard, you want to get on top. Either you sit up and try to wrestle up from the bottom, you try and attempt to take down from your butt, or you try to take down on the feet, and either way, you're risking front headlock territory. So that was one of the interesting components of that Ryan Hall matchup, at least in the preview. You know, in the actuality, it was circling off and then beating him up when he tried to come in again. But for Emmett, you know, it's been in the last 5 years he's been taken down once, I think, by Dan Ige. Only other time I can recall him being taken down was by Scott Holtzman back in the day. When was that? 2016. Yeah, so it's been a while. He trained a lot with the Alpha Male boys. I think he's based out of Alpha Male, isn't he? But yeah, strong wrestler who gets into awkward striking matches, whereas Ilia Topuria is a strong wrestler who gets into slightly cleaner striking matches, generally. Yeah, I'm intrigued. It's one of those ones where it could be that Ilia Topuria does just have more tools, and they are the same sort of fighter, but they just, as in like their physical gifts are very similar. But one guy just does smarter things. It could be that Ilia Topuria comes out, can't even hurt Josh Emmett, and Josh Emmett just bangs him out. We go, oh, wow, levels to this, or you know, my least favorite phrase in the English language. Yeah, the wrestling, I think, is going to be a compelling part, because Ilia Topuria is not the most defensively sound man alive. One of the things that really stands out to me about Ilia Topuria, very nice boxing stance to begin with, keeps his feet in place quite well, does a rhythm step, or Barry's going to be freaking out about that one. But, you know, right hand high, left hand up in front of the left eye, going in and out to jab, and uses level changes nicely, level changes on the body jab so he can come over the top with the overhand and so on. Well, not so on, just the overhand. But the right hand thing is an issue because he throws it and he always ends with it too. Or most of the time he ends with it. And that means that he's there for the counter left hook if the guy's feeling particularly brave. He's there for the left high kick. The left high kick was something that Jai Herbert used against him successfully. But for Emmett, who likes to stance switch and really only likes the overhand, I would say fight southpaw. Let Tapuria do his pressuring forwards and throwing at you and so on, and cover up and return with the overhand left, because you've got a great chance of chinning him on the return. As long as you're close enough that he can hit you, you've got a great chance of chinning him back. So that would be my only thing. I mean, I don't think Josh Emmett is going to debut a polished counter left hook, but if he does stand southpaw and he just swings back every time, that could be an issue for Tapuria just because of how he fights. Because he doesn't get back to his stance a lot. Tends to throw the right hand and also like sort of lean over, chasing after the guy. I mean, it's partly because he fights long, tall guys for the most part. He's a stocky guy. In fact, I was thinking today, Damon Jackson, gigantic guy for the weight class, really tall. But my only memories of him for the most part, he did front kick someone the other day. Was that Pat Sabatini? But my main memories of him are getting beaten up by people much smaller than him. He's like a Great Dane being beaten up by a Jack Russell in all the fights I recall of it, but that's just Ilya Topuria and Dan Ige, to be honest. But rest of this card, because I feel like I've already overthought that. I feel like I'm always overthinking fights with Josh Emmett in anyway. He's going to do the one thing that he does, and it'll either work or it won't. Amanda Ribas versus Macy Barber. Oh, God, I don't care. Justin Taffer versus Austin Lane. Again, don't care. David Onama's back against Gabriel Santos, who lost that split decision to Lerone Murphy. I thought he looked quite good in that. Because I rate Lerone Murphy pretty highly. I think I also watched his ones. I watched his previous one on LFA before that fight, and I thought he was all right. David Onama, you get to see, can he still do the journeyman clinch wrestling stuff without James Krause in his corner? Was the thing that you can't train with Krause anymore? Was that what the UFC said? Because if it's not that he just can't be in your corner, man, that's harsh if you can't train with him. Brendan Allen versus Bruno Silva. That's quite fun, actually, because Bruno Silva, he redeemed himself by knocking out Brad Tavares very quickly after coming back from the very embarrassing getting boxed up by Gerald Meerschaert. And Brendan Allen's on like a four-fight winning streak. Four fights? Yeah, four fights. Lost to Curtis back in 20... Man, he turned that around quick. Lost to Curtis in December of 2021, and in the last year and a bit, he got the freebie against Sam Alvey. He beat Jacob Malkoon. He beat Jocko. And he beat Andre Muniz. Finished Andre Muniz too, which is very impressive. As far as middleweight fights go, that's about as compelling as it can get. God, someone sent me an email saying, I suppose I'll read it out at some point. But just being like, their pitch was that middleweight's actually got more depth than lightweight. And I thought, God, maybe it does. I mean, there are a lot of people in the middleweight sort of top end. It's just that the champion's already beaten most of them. And they're not very good. But yeah, in terms of like number of people on the roster at middleweight, they certainly do seem to be filling out cards with named middleweight fights against each other, which is all you can ask for, really. Have the known fighters fight the known fighters. Anything else on this card? Gillian Robertson's back against Tabitha Ricci. Yeah, that's good. Zumagulov's back and he's grown his hair out and looks hilarious. Oh, and Tatsuro Taira versus Clayton Rodriguez. Now, in my mind brain, these two had fought already. But in fact, they're just the two shit-hot prospects that flyweight fanboys love to gush over. Oh, both of them fought for CJ Vergara, and Vergara actually beat Rodriguez when he wasn't supposed to. Yeah, like the looks of that fight. Elsewhere, MMA-wise, you got Ryzen on, and your main event is Kleber Quicker Herbst versus Chihiro Suzuki. I was rewatching Kleber's fight with Patricio Pitbull. I watched his fight with the one where he won the title from Juntaro Oshiku, who I consider a massive bum. Well, I mean, I don't know how he got the title in the first place, because there are names in that division, and I missed a few Ryzens. He somehow ended up with the title, and I'm looking at his record going, who the hell are these people that he beat? But Oshiku got triangle choked by Kleber Quicker Herbst. Then he fought Mikuru Asakura and spent three rounds jumping guard on him, in a way that was very fixed fight look, or rather thrown fight looking, because he chinned him in the third round. He came out and he threw his first punch and wobbled Mikuru Asakura, and then he immediately ran to the fence with him, had Mikuru Asakura's back to the fence, and he jumped guard on him. And you're going, yeah, this is sussy as hell. But Koike Erbst's submission of him was quite impressive. Because I was looking at Koike Erbst a few years back. Back when I was doing Prospect Watch, I did a couple of Prospect Watch pieces at the Fight Primer, and then I didn't continue that series. But I got, like, Aliyev and, God, that big light heavyweight from Russia, who I haven't checked in a while because he lost to random, I want to say Turkmenistani. But yes, one of my ideas was Kleber Koike Erbst. I was quite interested in him. He had some interest. He had a fight against Matheus Gamrot where he sort of ran into the problem that he was always going to run into, which is like his wrestling isn't good, generally. Great submission artist. You know, way back in the day, like 2015, he dasted Miguel Torres in a one-night tournament. He finished Yusuke Yachi, Wiki Akio, who's not a great grappler. And then he started getting some momentum when he beat Makuru Asakura back in 2021, Anolka Sasaki. But, against Patricio Pitbull and Ushiku, actually, I was interested because he used a headlock throw. And when I say headlock throw, I mean no head and arm, just the head. Real strict wrestling style. And I watched him do it against... He did it to Pitbull, and Pitbull just pushed him off afterwards. So he ended up... He basically rolled all the way through and flew across the ring. But he did it against Ushiku, and he threw him with the headlock, or started like falling over with the headlock, very WMMA style. And Ushiku put his hands out on the floor, and Kleber Koike Erbst jumped over his back into that overhook armbar that we were talking about the other week, that Craig Jones does, Dustin Hazlett did back in the day, Ronda versus Katsingano. And he sort of doesn't get the armbar, but does like what I like to call a hanging basket triangle, which is where you're jumping over for the armbar, and you sit back on a triangle instead. And Gary Tonin did it to Gilbert Burns in a grappling match. And he gets the choke, and it was gorgeous. And then he did the same headlock throw against Patricio Pitbull, but sadly couldn't keep him down. What I was surprised by, going back to that Pitbull fight, yeah, another classic Patricio Pitbull low output fight. But he didn't even really have any big moments in that fight. The big moment was Erbst finally getting down in the second or third or whatever it was. And Patricio Pitbull used, I think it was a lockdown, to really nicely pummel in a butterfly hook from half guard and go back to full butterfly guard and stand up. He didn't look in trouble at all with Kleber Koike Erbst on the ground on top of him, which was very impressive. But yes, Erbst wrestling has sort of let him down. But luckily, he's fighting a kickboxer. This is what Ryzen is doing, or has been doing for a long time, just trying to convince this boom in Japanese kickboxing. They've been trying to convince some guys to come over, and they've been able to. And if they haven't, they just do kickboxing matches in green gloves. In fact, I think it was Rise announced that they're doing a 4-ounce kickboxing part of their promotion. Basically because Ya Man is good with 4-ounce gloves, but not good at MMA and not good at kickboxing with big gloves. But yes, Chihiro Suzuki is an interesting one because he's one of these guys. Like, there's Ren Hiramata, who everyone is really hot on. And everyone sort of shat on Ren Hiramoto. His last performance in Ryzen was back at, was it Ryzen 42 or the Landmark event before that? Yeah, Ryzen Landmark 5. So he's 2-3. In fact, he lost to Chihiro Suzuki in his second fight. But in his last one, he fought this guy, Yutaka Saito, and I thought he looked fine. I thought he looked good, improving, in fact, in his wall wrestling, his cage work and stuff. But he's a guy who was so hot on the kickboxing scene. People were talking about how like he had several wins over Tenshin when they were teenagers coming up through the amateur ranks or something like that. And he trained with Tenshin, and like they had Tenshin saying like he's the most talented kickboxer in Japan and stuff. But they convinced him to come over to MMA, and he's just sort of like wasting away, presumably because of the money, trying to make an MMA career. But Chihiro Suzuki has managed to get to the point in his MMA career where they're giving him a title shot, but also continued kickboxing. He kickboxed back in March, which is more recent than his last MMA fight. But I watched his fight. I mean, he's fought Imanari, and I haven't seen that one, but Imanari is a almost entirely grappling-centric fighter, so, you know, a bit of a test, even though Imanari's wrestling ain't really worth much, and he's about 50 years old now. But I watched his last one against Yoshiki Nakahara, and he seemed to be losing the grappling, the wrestling, and the striking. And then he just hit this guy and stunned him and knocked him out 5 minutes into round one. And I was still going, I was left going, I don't get what you did. You know, you're getting outlanded. You see, he seemed to be landing harder shots than you too. And you still managed to sort of like scrappily get back into the fight and knock him out in a very quick fashion from, you know, being largely on the defensive and not doing anything to turning the fight around. So I was sort of impressed, but sort of underwhelmed at the same time. I feel like this is just them getting Kleber a title defense under his belt, to be honest. But he's worth watching. He's fun. He's a good great grappler, in fact, and he's a great guard player. Problem is that, of course, you don't win fights from guard unless you do. Unless the guy, most of fighting is done in like 50-50 positions, battling for the slightest of advantage. To win from guard, you are giving the guy an advantage position and trying to win from a disadvantage position. Anything else on that card? Not really for me. Yusuke Yachi's on. I like him. He's fighting he's fighting a guy with a 50-50 record called Zach Zane. Hideki Shrek's on. Yeah, whatever. He's on every Rising card for the nerds who love this stuff. And, Minoru Kibura's around. He's great. He had an embarrassing loss to, Crazy Horse Bennett in an MMA match. He got smoked by punches, which is very embarrassing for a kickboxer. But he went on to be a really good kickboxer, actually. He's been smoking everyone. Oh, and Yuta Kubo's back. That's hilarious. Yuta Kubo, one of the best kickboxers in the world for quite a while, gave Masaki Noiri a hard time. I think did he go 2-1 in a trilogy with him? Or did they have four fights? They had a number of fights, but very, very good kickboxer. Not the most interesting in the world, but very, very good. And he wouldn't stop like having a public divorce with his wife on Twitter. He'd get drunk and just be tweeting, "My wife hates me and I think she's cheating on me." And so he retired from kickboxing and now he's doing like part-time MMA. It's very weird. But again, this speaks to like where the money is. So what else we got on? One is they got their heavyweight title fight, unification fight between Arjun Bulla and Anatoly Malakhin. Malakhin just beat Renia Derrida. Looked massive in that fight, you know, much bigger than him. But I think he's undefeated, is he? Yeah, I mean, he's a giant roidy Russian. And he's fighting Arjun Bulla, who I called him Bollywood DC because when he won the belt 2 years ago against Brandon Vera and hasn't fought since, he was doing the reaching with his hands and then doing the jab, you know, the mummy guard and jabbing people like that. And I was actually quite impressed with him, even though Brandon Vera was like 60 years old at the time. But he's been booked to fight Malakhin twice. Both fights have fallen through. People are expecting this third one to fall through. You get the sense that Chatri and all the one people hate working with him, but they've made a rod for their own back. They were like, we're going to dominate India because we've got an Indian champ now. I don't know if India cared at all. But yeah, good for Arjun Bulla, because like even if he gets jobbed out here, I felt like he looked better in one than when he went life and death with Juan Adams and was the first and only UFC heavyweight to lose by Omoplata, and I believe only lost by Omoplata in the UFC ever. Elsewhere on the card, you got Same in 4 ounce Muay Thai against, can't say this name, but Prajin Chai, and that's for the vacant flyweight title. Should be banger. Same, you know, old as the hills. 400 fights, I think he's got now. But he looked great in his last one. You got Muang Thai on the card against some guy from Scotland. Could be a really good Scottish Nakmoy. I don't know about Muay Thai, so I can't tell you. But more than likely, Muang Thai gets the style on someone, which is great. You got a load of Thai guys I'm not super familiar with. And I've been told that Superleg was on this card, but they don't seem to have him on the topology page. But I feel like that was the case the last time Superleg fought as well. Then you got the return of Takeru, which I don't know how to watch, but he's fighting a guy called Sugden. Sugden's a ISKA champion, but that doesn't really mean anything in the larger scheme of things. This seems to be like just Takeru getting back in action after the match. However, I suspect he's been in action in the gym like constantly, because there's so many clips of him and Yuki Oza, who is two weight classes heavier than him, I believe. I mean, Yuki Oza's a small lightweight, but he's a lightweight, and Takeru's a bantamweight, and they just kicked the shit out of each other. They were training together for a couple of weeks, and every day new footage of them just standing and trading came out. Bonkers. The gym culture in Japan for from what I've seen generally, is insane. And I think most J-kick people would agree with that. Like, it's not going to breed longevity. Whereas if you ever see any footage of Thais in the gym, they're just arsing around. They're mainly just having a laugh. Half the time, if you see two Thais who know each other in a fight, they're having a laugh. But the word is that Takeru has signed with ONE, or as I say the word is, they announced that he'd signed with ONE after this fight was booked. So this seems to be his tune-up, and then he goes back to ONE to fight in their super series, or striking series, or whatever it's called. They obviously have Rod Tang. That's a very fun fight. They have Haggerty, they have Nongo. Ah, shit, I've just named a load of four-ounce Muay Thai fighters. They also have a kickboxing division, and I can't remember who's the guy in that one. 4 ounce is probably not going to favor Takeru with the amount of getting in people's faces he does. But yeah, you know, I love me some Takeru. You know what you're watching for. Lead leg kicking into two-fisted hitting combos. Particularly the step-up lead leg front kick and the step-up inside low kick into two-fisted punching combinations. Also having a cast iron chin. There's a shootboxing card, which I'm only mentioning because Kaito's fighting and he's fantastic. Had a fight with Masaki Noiri on the match, and he beat him. Yeah, and Noiri's, he's been great for ages, but he's still great. And to beat him is a feat. Kaito, he's like the most famous. Well, he's the guy who is the shootboxer. But it's quite interesting because like a lot of the kickboxing rankings, or the ones that I read, you know, Beyond Kick and Combat Press, they don't consider shootboxing matches to be kickboxing matches because there is the rules aren't, they're different enough that they could be considered their own sport because you've got like standing submissions and lots of throws. Whereas kickboxing, obviously, the idea is to avoid throwing at all costs. Actually, we could talk about Asawa versus Satomi, which I was just watching earlier today. Because that he had the whole fight overturned on a court kick coming back into a knockdown. And Sanchai lost his, or did he lose? He lost a point in his glory debut, possibly only glory fight. Can't remember if he went back there, but he lost a point based on holding the guy's leg too long after catching it. But yes, shootboxing, basically a different sport, so they don't tend to consider it. But then consider how good Kaito must be that this is his main sport, and then he sort of like moonlights fighting other kickboxers in kickboxing matches, and has done well enough that people rank him in the top 10 in the world in his division. That's like if I were beating the IBJJF no-gi champs or the ADCC champs in super fights, and then they asked me to come to ADCC, and I was like, I'm sorry, I only compete under Lucha Livre rules. Or some weird shit like Turkish oil wrestling. Which brings us full circle to Street Fighter. and then boxing-wise, we got Franco versus Ioka, which, you know, the first fight was, I think these guys are flyweight, just plain flyweight, not super flyweight or whatever, but it's for one of the belts. And they fought in 2022, they got a draw. It was an all-action fight, but it was one of those ones you put on and you just have them on in the background because they took lumps out of each other, but they weren't, there was no, no one ever looked like they were going to fall and not get up. It was, Ioka didn't really have the power of Franco, but he threw more volume. Franco, his shots looked cleaner, but he didn't throw as much, it seemed. One of the fun things, like, I mean, bring up the highlights for yourself here, but one of the funny things about the fight is that they, because it was in Japan, and Franco had tattoos, and Japanese gyms frowned on tattoos. You tend to have to cover up over there. Like, you know, if you're going to train in Japan and you've got cool sleeves, take a long sleeve rash guard would be my advice. But Japanese boxing, they asked him to like cover up his tattoo, and he's sort of an olive skinned dude, and they gave him, I want to say the whitest foundation they could find, but it looked like the stuff that they put on the face of Kabuki theater performers, because he just had one arm that was white from the shoulder down to the forearm. But yeah, we aren't starved for action this weekend. There'll be some fun stuff happening, regardless of whether the UFC delivers or not. Another week closer to Holly Holm versus Bueno Silva. Fucking hell. But someone did put up the cards for the next three pay-per-views, and that did encourage me, at least. This is the time of the year where we should be getting the really good pay-per-views. You know, July has historically been great pay-per-view time. But we got a Sean Strickland main event on the first to get through before that. Anyway, I'm your boy, Jack Slack. I'm going to find something fun to write on Friday. I want to treat myself to fights I enjoy. You know where to find all my stuff. You're a boy. You're my boy. I'm your boy, Jack Slack. And I will catch you with an article on Friday and on the podcast on Monday. Cheers. Sugged and upset. Bless.